Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godick, and with me today is Lauren Sigg. Welcome to the podcast.
John, thanks so much for having me on this. When you were talking about needing someone to interview, I was like, man, that'd be a lot of fun. And get to hang out with my buddy John. What could be better, right?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, we've only talked probably like two times. Like in the 2 years that I've been on with the network. So yeah. this is for me, it's a fun chance to get together and get to know the true Lauren.
Yeah. And you've been, oh my gosh, the true Lauren. It'll take more than one interview for that. I'm a nut job. But no, well, you've been with No Direction for a while. Like, you know, you're part of the family.
Yeah. I still feel, you know, because I'm not the last ad, but I haven't been here. Like, you know, a lot of people have been here like for 10 years or more.
Yeah.
You know, and you've been here like for 5 years at least, right?
I think so. So yeah, I started with No Direction in my first year of undergraduate, which I think was about 5 years ago. Maybe even coming on six. Like, you know, I'm getting old. Time just sneaks up on you.
Yeah. Well, don't talk to me about old. So, well, Lauren is a freelance author who has writing credits with Paizo, Legendary Games, Swords for Hire, and Encounter Table Publishing. In addition, she's been writing the Dear Dova Queen blog on the No Direction Network for 5 years and has been co-host of the Pathfinder Second Edition podcast Legend Lore on the network for the past 2 years. So you've been kind of busy off and on during your time.
Has it really been 2 years since we started Legend Lore?
I know. It's just, I know. That's just amazing because we both started, you know, I started Digital Divination with Ron about the same time, and it's like, yeah. It's like we're getting, it's not too long before it's going to be, you know,
well, originally,
a real thing.
Yeah, originally Ryan pitched to me, we want you to be the Pathfinder version of Digital Divination. So Ryan assembled his Avengers. He said, Luis, Lauren, I want you guys to put this podcast together. And I don't remember who came up with the name. I don't remember if it was me or Ryan or Luis, but we were all kind of like, yeah, that's actually pretty. I think it was me and Luis. I think we did that. But
well,
from
you
what
guys
I hear,
came up with your name first, though. You came up with a name first. It was just Ron and I were going to do a podcast, and then you and Luis were doing one, and you got a name. So then we had to get a name that had the same alliteration.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I remember, since we were supposed to be like the yin to your yang, right? Yeah. But the two shows, they just kind of went in their own directions, right? Like me and Luis are just nuts on there. We just have a crazy time.
Well, I, you know, the ones I've listened to, because I've just recently started getting into Second Edition after spending my whole prior life doing Starfinder, you know, for the last bunch of years. You guys are way more rulesy than we are.
We're more rulesy.
Oh, we're rules light for sure. Yeah, yeah.
I know. Well, okay. So part of our show is that, you know, we do, I almost consider it like Pathfinder education for, or, you know, like me and Luis, like together, we've been doing this for almost 40 years. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Like we've been doing this for a long time. So, you know, we're just kind of trying to maybe teach some people some of our tricks and stuff. And sometimes you got to use the rules to do it, right?
But you haven't been doing Pathfinder for that long, but you've
That's
been
right.
doing role-playing games, I presume you mean.
Yeah, I started with second edition Dungeons & Dragons with a box of old moldy D&D books that my grandpa found in his barn. And that's how I got my start, was with those D&D books.
Well, I won't say how much longer Ron and I have been playing then, because we are both older than you and Luis by a long shot. So can you tell me how you got started, though, you know, with the network in the first place?
Yeah. It's all because of Encounter Table Publishing. I don't know if he's still doing anything, but that was essentially Robert Brooks's baby. Right. And he's the one who kind of introduced me to Pathfinder and to, you know, freelancing and writing and not just being all homebrew. Well, OK, here's what happened. Right. I was working at Walgreens, and I'd had this idea for years for a campaign. I was so excited, but I knew I was going to have to, using 3.5, I was going to have to homebrew a lot of my ideas. And I met a buddy there who's like, hey, try Pathfinder. So I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll take my ideas. I'll put them in Pathfinder. But I don't know if anybody's going to like these ideas. I don't know if anybody's going to like my variant character creation rules, my homebrew world. So I just wrote it all up in what I thought was pretty good. And I put it on these Facebook groups for Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. And I know like Facebook doesn't have downvotes, but Reddit does. And in Reddit terms, I got downvoted just from the comments. Like, people's comments were like, this is terrible. You should be ashamed. Old Bobby Brooks, he saw the stuff I was doing in there, and he was like, wow, who do you work with? This is great. And I was like, well, Robert, I don't know anybody, but I don't work with any. I work for myself, but thanks. He's like, all right, well, you can work for me now. And Rob gave me, you know, like a project to do, and I went to PaizoCon, and I met Jason Nelson from Legendary Games, and did a lot of work with him. Most of my work was with Legendary. Yeah, and I was always doing my blog that whole time. After I met Robert Brooks, I knew that if I wanted to get noticed, the way I would do that was create my own thing and do it regularly. So for me, that meant one publication or one internet blog post per week, no matter what, always on the same day. It was like Fridays or something. There was always a Dear Dova Queen coming out on Fridays. And the thing that was unique is I had never seen another advice column in the Dear Abby style for tabletop role-playing games. I was thinking, like, I got all this experience. I've been doing this for so friggin' long. I bet I could give some people some ideas. And so I started asking for questions. I started, you know, I started an email forward and said, hey, send your questions to Dear Dova Queen. And that's what I did for years and years. And Ryan saw that. And he was like, we need another blogger. I want Lauren. And so that's how I started with KD, is I started doing the Dear Dova Queen advice column with KD.
Nice, nice. And can you tell me the kind of stuff that you've been putting on that over the last couple of years with No Direction?
Well, unfortunately, as my because I was always doing this concurrently with my continuing education, right? It was my undergrad at the time. Now it's grad school. And every year that I am deeper in academia is another year where my workload in academia increases to the point where I've had to start shelving projects. Dear Dova Queen has unfortunately been shelved for maybe 2 or 3 years now. Mm-hmm. I started some tangential blogs that were designed to be just a little bit less work. The most recent one was Bend the Knee. Oh my gosh. I loved that one. But just because of all the writing I'm doing for school, I just don't have it in me to sit down and write these prompts. So that's when I told Ryan, I was like, I'm not going to say I'll never write blogs again, but until my schedule's a little freer, I'm just going to do these podcasts. They're a little bit easier for me. They don't take as much energy, you know?
Well, as somebody who's been an academic now for 20 years, I can 100% understand not having the energy for doing a lot of additional writing.
Okay, yeah. Since you've been doing this for 20 years, you have to tell me, does it ever get better?
Oh, yes, I was going to say that. You know, and I mentioned this, you know, a couple of years ago when you were looking at programs and stuff, and I mentioned, you know, it's really, really tough when you're in the program itself, because you have to learn how to get through all this stuff they give you to read, right? There's just so much, to read, because getting a PhD, which you are doing in what now?
So I am a wildlife biologist, but I'm doing my doctoral research on animal intelligence.
Okay. And we'll talk about that later, because I want to know more.
Oh, don't get me started.
But when you're working on this PhD, so one of the things that is going to end up when you get out of the program is you're going to be the world expert on some niche in that area.
Yeah.
And the way I like to explain it to folks is that in any given area, there's probably 500 or 600 papers that you have to be familiar with. Mm-hmm. And there's probably about 10%, 50 or 60 that you have to know really, really well. And then you're going to write of your own 5 or 6, so 10% of that, that's just on your area of expertise. But in order to do that, you have to know what everybody else has already done so that you can make a new contribution.
Yeah. And
understanding that, being able to digest all this stuff that people with so much experience and training and doing all this research have written, that takes a while for you to digest. And I think so have you done with your coursework now?
Oh, you know, I think I've got another 1 or 2 semesters of coursework ahead of me.
Yeah. So by the time you're done with your coursework and then you start working on your own research, right, when you get that more earnestly of that, I think that's when it starts kind of clicking for you, precisely knowing how to get through stuff. I mean, I remember the very first seminar I had, it's like, you know, we had 10 papers to read in a week, and it's like, it took me 10 hours per paper. It's like, there's no way. There's no way. How are we supposed to do this? And I was going to give up. And people said, it gets better. And you must be past that initial part anyway.
Coming in, it was like pulling teeth to read even one paper a day. Yeah. And I have found that it gets faster. You even get to a point where you understand it well enough that it's like, hey, this is kind of cool. I kind of like what I'm reading about.
Yeah, once you start narrowing the focus and you kind of start, you're able to group things by area, that helps a lot because they use similar methodology, terminology, they reference similar things. And then you are able to start saying, oh, yeah, this is in this camp of research or this is in this camp of research. So now you can just kind of peel apart the little differences that they show from what the other people show.
Yeah. And it's a kind of a double-edged sword that my specific area, comparative cognition, where we're trying to kind of demonstrate that animals are much more comparable to ourselves than people like to realize. Wow. The double-edged sword here is that our field is so small that there's fewer papers probably that I need to know about, but there's also fewer papers that I can use and that I can build off of. I'm treading very uncharted water with my research.
Well, probably you have to draw from like human cognition, I imagine, then.
I do, right? Yeah.
Things like that and learning and stuff. So I actually did all the coursework for a PhD in psychology in social cognition. So that area I'm actually really excited about. So hearing that you're doing this kind of comparative work, I think is really cool.
Oh, my God. I love it so much. Yeah. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. Well, how is this? Can you apply any of this to what you do in terms of for role playing games?
Surprisingly, a lot, I think. So, as a player, okay, you're building a character, and you and your friends will have more fun the better and the more confident you are able to play that character. But at what point are you making decisions that you would make, and at what point are you making decisions the character would make? Mm-hmm. And how often are we playing characters just completely wrong? Like we write a character, we're like, I'm lawful good, so I'm going to obey every law and dot every I and cross every T, right? That's not how people work. And I think the more you think about cognition, the more you think about, especially animals, right? They can't tell you what they're thinking. You have to learn their language. You have to get into their mind to learn what they're thinking. Man, if you can apply that to a character that you've written, though, you will write more interesting characters and you'll do a better job making their decisions in the moment. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, a big part of what we do is also ecology. And every time I wrote a monster for Jason in Legendary Games, most of what I did was monster writing. I was always thinking about the ecological impacts of the monsters I was creating. Why does it have this ability? How does it use this ability? What's the fitness consequences of this on other creatures? And I think you write better monsters that way too.
You know, I that is an awesome approach. I was talking to Tim Nightingale, who's an entomologist, right? So he's a bug guy.
Yeah.
A water bug guy in particular. And so that's kind of how he would make monsters is he would take a bug, a really kind of some small scale thing and blow it up really big and do the same thing in terms of why did they do this? Why did they do this? And kind of make it actually fit the environment. So cool. That is.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. I think that you can get a lot of inspiration from the natural world just because nature is far crazier than anything we can come up with.
That's a scary thought now, reading some of the stuff that people come up with.
Yeah, especially consider like so right now my research, our model organism is a fish just from the swamps. But I think I want to take my career to the deep ocean and apply a lot of my cognition to like the giant squid and like some of our cryptozoological creatures, which have been proven to exist, yeah. You know?
Wow. And so now in your field, do you all do a lot of field work too then, or is it mostly lab work?
Well, you know, it's kind of both. I'd say it's more lab work because what we do is we have these fish that come from these swamps, but we bring them back to our lab and we breed them over the course of many generations. And by like the fifth generation, they're ready to undergo testing so we can understand more about their intelligence. Mm-hmm. So we probably go out into the field once or twice a year, and most of everything else is done here.
Well, I hope you start bringing back giant squid and breeding them. I think that would be really interesting.
That is, so I have a list of goals in life, and some of them are more far-fetched, some of them are more attainable. Getting my PhD is a little bit more attainable.
Yeah.
One of my unattainable ones, but I'm still going to work my butt off to get it, is I want to get a giant squid into an aquarium where the public can see it. I don't think that'll happen in my lifetime, but I'm going to keep trying, right? You miss every shot you don't take. I'm going to keep trying, even if it never happens. I'm going to work for it.
Yeah, I can't, you know, just kind of thinking the mechanics of trying to capture one, you know, how deep they are, bringing it up.
Well, wouldn't capture one. You'd get the larva.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and we can get their larva. Like, that's not a problem. It's just we can't keep it alive.
Oh, is it just because the conditions is used to high pressure, high density or something, cold?
We hypothesize it's the conditions, but we really can't know. We haven't kept one alive yet.
Wow. Oh, that's wild.
And so I've got all kinds of ideas that I'd like to try, but, you know, obviously I'm just a grad student. I don't have that kind of funding yet.
Yes, I guess you have to have a really good reason for some, you know, for the National Science Foundation to want to fund that sort of endeavor, huh?
You know, I kind of think that's a pretty good reason in itself on my own, right? Like, this is one of the most elusive animals. We think they could be up to 13 different species of them, but we just don't know.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Well, I wish you luck on that. I think, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I'll tell you, I wanted to be a marine biologist. That was my goal in life. And I ended up going to a school. I went to a military academy, and they canceled the marine biology program as soon as I got there.
Of course.
So I ended up, again, I didn't have any money, didn't know where else to go. I stayed there, just had to change majors.
Yeah.
So, you know, so my kid is an environmental scientist. So she wants to go get a PhD. But doing stuff for in ecology. So I think that's really kind of a neat thing.
At the beginning of my education, my goal was to be a squid cognitionist, to study squid intelligence. Wow. And as I've, you know, grown in my career and seen more of what's available, I'm slowly just becoming just general animal intelligence. I still absolutely adore the ocean, and I'll still probably try to work with at least octopuses or cuttlefish, you know, but, you know, if I end up just working with dogs, I wouldn't even be mad at that. when you think about it, if one of my goals, right, is to show the public how smart animals are, dogs are probably the best model to use for that because we already understand them a little bit better than we do other animals, especially because of all the co-evolution.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned octopus, and I was actually going to ask you about that because there's been a lot written about how smart the octopus are in problem solving. Do squids, are they kind of the same way in terms of problem solving?
No. No.
Okay.
The octopus is an outlier. But I still want to look. I still want to know, right? Like cephalopod intelligence.
Right.
is so convergent, it's so distantly related to us that it had to evolve independently. So it is truly an alien mind in the cephalopod.
Right.
Then we have octopuses, we have cuttlefish, squid, and nautilus or nautiloids. But in primates, right, we have humans, we have gorillas, like the levels of intelligence there are different. So I suspect that the octopus to the squid is like the human to the chimpanzee or something, or maybe even more distant. I don't know. We haven't studied it well enough yet.
Wow. That, you know, that's a whole new line of thinking I never considered. So,
yeah, comparative cognition. Yeah, it's a fun rabbit hole.
Yeah. So you've done podcasting now. Was the Legend Lore your first podcasting, or did you do other stuff before that?
Well, you know, I've been a player on all of these actual plays, but Legend Lore was the first time I sat in as a co-host and was making my own content, you know? That was the first time I was doing that.
So how has that experience been, like from where you started to where you are now?
It was very smooth. it was not even a little bit difficult. And I was really expecting it to be very difficult. But I've kind of, I don't know, my whole life I've kind of had an easy time speaking in front of folks. So moving that to the camera and like using the recorder, that wasn't really that difficult for me. I just sit down with my buddy Luis, like we're doing now, and I just have a good time, John. I just come, I just have a good time. I'll put a tiny script up there with just guidelines. First, we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about this just to keep me a little bit on track. But any listener to Legend Lore knows Lauren is always taking it off track. I can't help it.
Well, you know, that sounds like how Ron and I started with digital divination. I used to write a script. We don't even script anything. It's like, you know, maybe an hour before we record, I'll shoot him an idea for a topic, and then... And then that's what we talk about, maybe. You know, we try to talk about it a little bit, but we're always just... So I think the difference with he and I is I see him a couple times a week, too. So we're pretty close. And this is just like another chance for us when we're not doing anything else to catch up and talk. So probably like the first 10 or 15 minutes, that's all we're doing is catching up on what happened during the weeks since we last saw each other.
Yeah. You know? I wish I got to see Luis more, but you know, he lives up there at Paizo Central and I'm down here in Alabama. We get to see each other for Legend Lore. I really want to do more projects with him.
Yeah. No, he seems like I've only chatted with him a couple times. He seems like the nicest guy though.
He's so chill. He's so chill. I think Ryan calls him the straight man in our outfit, you know, because I'm just a wild card.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a really nice pairing then.
I think so. I think we make a fantastic team. Yeah. It wouldn't be the same without him.
So when you guys are talking, kind of what role do you play and what role does he play in terms of when you're talking about stuff?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's a role. Like, we both share our thoughts on it. But the thing is, since we're coming from different places, he shares his thoughts as a publisher or as a developer. I share my thoughts as somebody who's just done it a long time.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of similar for Ron and I, you know. He's been he has his own third-party publisher. He's been a writer and a developer for a long time. I've been a player, a GM, and then I've been doing some writing. So definitely there's a lot of stuff I have to defer to him, but otherwise I think it's a good, you know, give and take between the two of us.
Yeah, I think on a lot of the Galarian lore, I'm just like, so Luis, this is what I'll do. I go, so Luis, this is what I know about Tal'Dorei. You know, it's like Italy, but more medieval. How much is that true? And Luis will be like, well, Lauren, what you got to realize about Tal'Dorei is this is the land of, you know, and like, you know, I kind of get it started and he kind of fixes it. Yep. If it's like lore, you know, for everything else, we're really neck and neck though.
Yeah. Nice.
Like when we do character classes, we always do builds. He has the Batman test, which is so much fun. And all of my builds used to be Vikings just because I can't help myself. So to put a limit on that, to dampen how many Vikings I was spitting out, we just, after the Batman test, we do the Viking test.
All right. So you got to tell me what the Batman test and the Viking test is then.
Okay, sure. Better yet, I'll have you do them. Okay. So let's come up with a class. How about, let's do one of the class just released, the Magus. All right, John.
Okay.
How is Batman similar to a Magus?
So all I know about the Magus is it is like a magic-based striker of some sort. Yeah. So I guess they're both strikers.
Okay, both strikers. And maybe Batman has like his utility belt, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. So like he kind of whips those out.
The Magus has a utility belt? I have no idea.
He's got, Magus has spells. You know, like a few spells. Yeah. Like the ones they rely on. So maybe Batman's like a Magus like that. Look, Luis is better at the Batman test, but but that's about how that goes. And so the Viking test now. So, John, can you picture a Viking that is a Magus or that uses the Magus class? What would that build be like? How would you build a Viking that is a Magus?
Strength based, I'm guessing. I didn't think Vikings really like magic a lot though. I thought they were not.
Well, you got to think like your traditional, like bog standard Viking warrior, maybe not, but you do have those pagan shaman.
Yeah.
You know,
shaman,
you
do.
A lot of times, especially because of magic, I'll kind of bring in from mythology, from the Nordic mythology. Be like, well, maybe this is someone who's touched by Thor. You know, so they have some of Thor's power, so they can channel lightning into their attacks.
Right.
Yeah, that's how I kind of do the Viking test.
So you're looking to see if you can make a Viking or a Batman out of it. That's the test?
Well, so you're looking to see if you can make a Viking out of the class. Or you're looking to see if you can make the class out of Batman.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of, they're a little bit different, but they're two sides of the same coin, I think.
No, Ron and I don't do a lot of builds. We just kind of talk about classes and stuff. I'm learning a lot about things that we might try in the future because we're running out of stuff that we want to talk about. So
The builds are just fun. It's just us having a good time. Yeah, if we're doing it one of our class, it's like, all right. So if I was building a barbarian, I don't want to build your traditional rage person. I'm going to build this kind of barbarian. And I'll come up with like some interesting build. And that's how we've been doing it. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. Nice. So what advice do you have for people that are interested in becoming a freelancer or becoming a podcaster?
Find a niche for yourself. Mm-hmm. Find something that somebody else isn't doing and do it regularly. Mm-hmm. Regularly is like a much bigger deal than anyone realizes. Your success in either podcasting or freelancing, it's made or made by how regular you are. You know, do it every week or do it every other week, but make it reliable. Make it something people can count on, you know. People can't look forward to Friday when your new blog post releases if you're not coming out every Friday. I think that's what you got to do. And the best part about it is it's also a practice makes perfect situation. You might suck at the beginning, but you slowly get better and better to the point where Ryan Costello or Robert Brooks, one of these kinds of people, find you and they're like, hey, you know, do you want to come do what you're doing, but with us? Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I like doing it so much more for the network than doing it on my own. It's really nice having people like you to support, you know, give me ideas, help me through the tough times and stuff. So
we're stronger together.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. The other thing I would say to people is go to conventions. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for PaizoCon, I wouldn't be where I am today. Mm-hmm. Those connections I made with Robert Brooks and with Jason at Legendary, it happened because of PaizoCon. And at Gen Con, it's just more networking. if you want to get into the industry, you have to go to these events and you have to try networking. I printed out a t-shirt with the logo I came up with, and I wore that to PaizoCon, and I handed out business cards. Mm-hmm. They were stupid, they were cheap, but they link back to my blog post. But the real thing there isn't what's on the business card. It's not what's on the logo. It's the fact that who else was doing that at PaizoCon? Mm-hmm. Nobody. Mm-hmm. So when I go up to the people wearing the Paizo shirts, I hand them a business card and introduce myself. That's going to stick out to them. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And that's how I got work. That's how I got started.
Cool. And what kind of cool stuff are you working on now besides your PhD, which is a pretty big thing?
Unfortunately, very little. I've had to just move so much off my plate, and I'm still behind. I'm told grad school is just constantly putting fires out. And I'm feeling that. I have so many fires. I'm so behind that I've had to move almost everything off my plate. And I only pick up projects now that require very little investment from me. Like Legend Lore is not bad because Luis volunteered to do all the production. I show up every other week and we have a chill time for an hour and that's it. Like I can do that. That's pretty easy for me. That's the same for playing in some of the actual plays that I'm in. I show up, I have a good time, I leave. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's almost my whole life. Like, I play video games, you know, me and my husband watch movies. I've got a little local group going where I'm running Reign of Winter, but mm-hmm. I'm converting it to second edition on the fly. So Wow. It's wildly unbalanced,
yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
No, well, it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, overall, what you're doing. And I think you're going to see it gets better. I think the first 2 years are really, in the program, are pretty overwhelming. Now, how long is your program overall? Is it a 4, 5, or 6? Do they know the general length?
It's as long as it takes you, but they try to get you out in 5.
Okay. Yeah. So my program was 4 or 5, and some programs are 5 or 6. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I'll tell you this, though. I do have a project on my back burner that is simmering hotly. Well, is that adjective? What is that?
It's simmering to a boil.
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot back there. I really, really want to start a YouTube channel with no direction or with some of the other KDers. Where we just play video games, right? Mm-hmm. And I want it to be a new video game every episode. And the key part of it is I as the host am bringing on one of our people, and I'm saying, all right, you're playing this game today. You've never played it before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I just watch them play it, and, you know, we talk about it. We laugh at the struggles, you know. It's like, what are you doing? That's not how you get the green gem, you know, that kind of stuff. I really, really want to start this. But the problem is I don't have any experience doing video production.
Right, right, right.
And if I try to learn it and if I try to do the production, it's just going to overwhelm me. I just don't have time for it. Mm-hmm. So if I can find someone to produce it, I will get the show going tomorrow.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, but I'm in the same boat as you. I just, yep. I would love to do, you know, Twitch streaming and stuff like that, but I'm not quite ready to pick up OBS and get it figured out yet, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If Vanessa had time, yeah. I'd get her in on the project, but she's just so busy. If Pam had time, I'd get him in on it. All of them, yeah. It's just everybody's just so busy, and I just don't have the time myself.
Well, you know, Andrew might have time. He's actually learned OBS, and he's down in Florida now, so he's actually closer to you.
Really? Is he producing anything right now?
He's not, but he was learning OBS last year, just to try to help out and do stuff. I think so.
And he did a couple with him too. We'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'll reach out.
Just kind of tell you that.
Andrew, we're going to link this to you, so you have to listen to the whole podcast so you can hear this pitch. Hit me up. Let me know if you want to be in on this.
Right. Well, Lauren, thanks so much for joining us today. It was really great getting to know you a little bit better, and hopefully we can chat a little bit more on the network.
Yeah, I had a great time. Hit me up anytime. We'll do a project together.
Yeah, and if you do that, if you do the thing you're doing, you got to invite me to play a game too.
Okay, well, I have one condition. You have to play a game with me before we record two. That way I kind of know how you play games and how to interact with you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. I used to do a lot of video gaming, and actually I quit it when it was overtaking my life.
Yeah.
And interfering with my graduate studies. So.
Yep. I'm really good at finding obscure indie games that are wildly good, but that just nobody's heard of.
That sounds great.
So that's what's going to be. All right. All right, John. I had a great time.
All right. Thanks again. Take care.